Hi there, everybody. I'm Jonathan Rain. I'm the contest director of NARM 46. And who's doing the slides? That's the first question.
All right, Mike.
Okay, we're off to a good start. All right, next thing. How does the laser pointer work? All right.
Stop,
you
point it at your face and then turn it on.
Okay. All right, if we could do that, AV piece. There we go, a lot better.
Very nice.
All right, let's start off by explaining the first slide here. We went through 41 renditions of the NARM patch, and we never got it right, according to Charlie, but that's okay. When you do a NARM, just getting the patch itself can just take too much time. And some of the variations, like there's a real big Virginia theme here, and there's a horse theme. And this like goes on forever, but that's the state bird. That's a jumping thing. That's the Novar Valkyrie. There's the horse head. That's the state seal of Virginia. And there's some seals that are not really for general public consumption, which are not here. But the most operative thing is we want to welcome you all to NARM 46. We're very happy that you're here, and I am sincere about that. Next, please. And we are glad you're here. This is the final seal, which is on the patch, and the t-shirt is a little bit different than this. So, but I think we got it right. The state of Virginia, the horse for Great Meadow, and the Novar Valkyrie. Next, please. And for you who are first-time NARM participants, we welcome you. This NARM really was designed for people who have never been to a NARM before. Because when I started out on this venture a year ago, I figured everyone who had come to a NARM before, sort of like herding sheep, they were going to come here. That wasn't an issue. So I was really trying to attract people who had never been to a NARM before. At the end of the day, we had about 30 people who had never been to a NARM before as far as competing. So I don't know whether that's a success, but it's better than two. Next slide. Here's some highlights of NARM. It's 6 days of sport flying and 4 days of contest flying. We have three build it and fly it sessions. We have tours of the Stephen F. Unpronounceable Center and the Aurora Flight Sciences Corporation on Tuesday, which the name was just, wish the guy from FedEx had donated the money, because this has been Fred Smith Center. It's a lot easier to say. We have our NAR auction on Tuesday night at 8:30. We have a barbecue social, followed by the Imagination Celebration Finals, and a midweek auction ceremony on Wednesday, Great Meadow. And to conclude NARM is the awards banquet Friday night at 6:30 here in this room, plus this wall is going to go away, so we're going to have a huge ballroom, and hopefully, the contestants will be able to get to the trophies. We won't have a trophy pass like has occurred at previous NARMs, but until I see it, like, nothing's guaranteed. Next, please. Here's some quick facts. Hosted by the Northern Virginia Association of Rocketry, NOVAR, NAR Section 205. NOVAR hosted at least two NARMs previously, 30 years ago, NARM 16 in Manassas, and NARM 31 was 15 years ago. We have 225 pre-registered participants, and no, we weren't counting like infants and people just kind of walked, you know, down my street. There really are legitimately 225 people applied for NARM. Of that, we have 111 A, B, C, and T entries, and each team counts as one number for the 111. So it's a reasonably sized NARM. And I want to stop here, and I'd like to have the members of my section stand up, if you could. This wouldn't be possible without the members of NOVAR. NOVAR is a great club, and we're here to make your week here an enjoyable one. Talk a little bit about Great Meadow. As many of you know, NOVAR flew from the Manassas National Battlefield for many years, probably about 20 years, because NARM 16 was there, so it was a long time ago, 20, 25 years. The place that we flew from, the picnic ground, we were kicked out of about 10 years ago, and then about, I guess, 4 years ago, we were kicked out of Manassas entirely. And it wasn't because we were bad corporate citizens. It was rather, for some reason, they couldn't find any citations in G. Harry's book of model rocketry about model rocketry during the Civil War.
So our usage was not what have you within the paradigms of Civil War historians. So we lost our field. And we wandered in the desert for about 6 months, and then John Hockheimer knocked on the door of Great Meadow and said, "Hi, we want to fly rockets here." And they said, "Okay." And we're very, very fortunate to have Great Meadow. Great Meadow is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and its primary purpose is the preservation of open space. Everything that you see at Great Meadow was going to be a housing development. If you go inside the summer house at Great Meadow, there's a plan, the blueprints of that housing development. So we're very fortunate it's there. It's among the premier steeplechase event centers in the United States. They have two Gold Cup events that people travel from around the United States to attend. And the bottom line is that this is our flying field. Someone asked me today, like, do we fly here anything besides Aaron? Yes, we fly here once a month. It's also where we have the Team America Rocketry Challenge. So we're asking people to treat Great Meadows facility gently. Next. And on that note, we just want to make sure that, you know, sea trash, you pick it up and you throw it away. Next, please. Here's some logistics items. We have 3 porta potties on the field, and we will have the honey truck come in to kind of clean them up during the week. But there's a bonus to Great Meadow. We actually have running water, real bathrooms, real sinks, but they're hard to find. This is your map to where the bathrooms are. This thing here is called a sewer stand. It's actually used during Gold Cup events. And underneath it, there's this little bullet thing. It looks like that. There's a door right there. If you walk through that door, you'll find a men and a women's bathrooms that are in there. So I suggest that you visit it, because it's a good place to go. Literally. Next. Okay, don't even fly it. You saw the sewer stand? Just go back if you could, Trip. Nope, other way.
PowerPoint, it doesn't reverse.
Okay. Well, if you saw that quickly, that was where building flying is. Nope, thank you. Right here. That area there is where Build and Flight is. So to the left of the door to the John is where Build and Flight is. And go next. And we have 3 Build and Flight sessions on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we've already filled up the sessions. If you want to participate in Build and Flight, you basically have to accost Robert Edmonds for tomorrow or Ken Brown for Wednesday and Thursday and ask if they have kits to fit you in. That's the way that works. And we're very, very fortunate that we have 2 manufacturers within Novar to help us out. Next, please. On Wednesday evening, we have a barbecue that's being catered by Red Hot and Blue. Red Hot and Blue is one of the leading barbecue restaurants within Washington. It's going to be in front of the summer house. At the conclusion of flying on Wednesday, all of the contestants are miraculously going to somehow carry all the tables that we have and put them out here so Red Hot and Blue can set up. We'll figure out how to do that. We're going to probably just sling them on trucks. But this is the last night to order the barbecue. If you want to order the barbecue, you have to go back to registration, which is open until 9:30, to order it. I think it's $16, and I think it would be worthwhile to pick up the barbecue. Next. We're selling water at the field for $1. It will be sold tomorrow within the range area. It's been sold at registration for the past few days under the red and white striped tent. That red and white striped tent will no longer be registration tomorrow. It'll be a quote-unquote contestant's prep area where you get out of the sun, there'll be tables and chairs, and you can set up there to work on your rockets under that red and white tent that's right outside the north rail. But we will be selling at the range tent water for $1. Next, please. Now, we were unable to secure a food vendor for NARA because everybody wanted a guarantee, and that's something that we really weren't able to do as far as how much you would eat. But we're very fortunate that there's a country store that's directly across the street. It does not look like this, but this is a country store that's available to me to put on the slide. So if you're looking for this, good luck. So this is like artist conception, you know. This is the sports scale version of the country store. Right, roughly the same color. But everyone's remarked to me about how inexpensive it is. compared to like 7-Eleven prices. So they'll be open throughout the week. And if you, they take phone orders, then once they get the phone number, they can see me.
They have air conditioning.
And they have air conditioning. They have tables, the checkerboard, a tablecloth to sit at. They can have a bathroom. I haven't explored that. But anyway, it's there. And they know about us. Next place.
Marshall's all the time there anyway.
Marshall's is, yeah, 5 minutes away. You drive, Dan. So, yeah, Marshall's is down the road. It's 7 miles away, according to MapQuest. Okay, let's talk about the range layout. Most of you have been there. Things are going to be a little bit different starting tomorrow. First thing I want to talk about is we've been flying sport rockets off of this area here.
Is this working?
Good. I'm colorblind, so I can't see the darn thing. Okay, so we've been flying off of here. We're not going to be, this is where we're going to move the sport rockets to. Now, we got rained out today around 3 o'clock, and this is what I like to do about the fun event, for everyone's listening. On Wednesday, which is a little bit slower day for us as far as flying, is I'd like to take the first couple hours till noon so we can finish off low glide, the RC flying, and the saucer event. So, for those of you who did not get to fly today, there's still an opportunity to fly. And then also, I think we got rained out for one round of Imagination Celebration. We'll work that out. But it'll be out in the Mod Rock range. Next slide, please. And for those of you who don't understand the diagram, there's a picture of the model rocket range, and that is not an artist's conception. That's what it looks like. Next, please. Okay, then we have a high power pad that's set up over here. We have a common LCO. Next. And we have basically six positions that are there, plus we have an away cell that's 200 feet out. We support up to J power, and our waiver is 4,500 feet. We have tables to help us determine whether you're going to break our waiver or not. But that's basically, we can support rods up to, I guess, half inch, three quarters, something of that nature. But we have a really good crew to handle HPR this week, very qualified people from Novar. Next please. And finally, the contest range. We have 18 pads, no waiting, over a huge 40 by 40 tent. We ordered a 30 by 30. They were out of 30 by 30s. We got a 40 by 40. The thing is so large, we cut all the runners out of the range assignments earlier because, like, what are they going to do? Because everything's going to be so cluttered in the tent. And then we have this 40 by 40 tent shows up, and we'll deal with it. One thing that you haven't seen in action is we have two timing pens. We have a timing pen to the left and the right. The purpose of that is that as the wind direction changes, we're going to move the timers from one pen to another. I've gone to a couple narrows where there's been one timing pen, and people have had to look through the tent. The other thing is that queue manager, which is usually over here, as the wind shifts, we're going to move the slider over here, so the queue manager will shift back and forth. We're really going to try to work on the card flow and things visually to make things as smoothly as possible. This, with this Great Meadow 20 by 20, that is where the contestant's prep tent is. That's the steward stand over there. That's the summer house where the barbecue is going to be. And the awards, there's an area down here where the awards are going to be. But the flyer parking is here. And please do not crawl through the wire fence. We don't want to lose our field. And mess up the fence will certainly not help us. Next please.
That's
the maintenance shop. Oh, okay. Yes. Yes, that's where they can turn you into a souvenir. All right, this is a picture of our 40 by 40 big top with the red and white stripes in the back. This is after a flight. The field is not on fire. You need a flamethrower to set this field on fire, but it's not a challenge to anyone. This is our 18 pads. Next, please. All right, let's talk about what you do at a narrow in terms of when you want to make a contest flight. First of all, you know, years ago when you went to an arrow, they give you a packet, and all your flight cards will be inside the packet for you to lose between the time you got the flight cards and you went to check-in. Well, that's changed. We have all the cards at check-in, and we have labels with your name on it, and hopefully your name is spelled correctly. If it's not, I apologize. And when you show up, bring your rocket ready to fly, or reasonably ready to fly, to pre-flight check-in. and we'll do a safety check there. We'll issue the flight card. We'll put the label on, and then it'll be passed to next slide. Pre-flight check. Wait, Soup. Soup, pad assignment. Throw me off. Okay, the pad assignment. A pad assignment, I was putting this thing like for rack and rail forever. And I was like, what do they call this thing today? So anyway, it shows my age. It's pad assignment. They'll assign you a pad. Next, please. And then you'll go to your pad. The one thing I want to point out about the pad, because I think some people haven't seen this, I've been here before, it's important to know, is that this is the wire that goes to your microclip, and that red button there is the continuity tester. There's a little battery inside this white box, and once you hook up your clip, press that red button, it'll tell you whether you're continuity or not. You don't have to call in to the launch control officer and say, you know, do I have continuity?
Yeah.
How much current is this other continuity checker?
It's 5-volt state.
The continuity checker is 5-volt state. Next one. Okay. This is NAR-74976. This is my 5-year-old, Jacob Raines. And when you're ready to fly, there's a paddle that is next to the pad. Notice how it says next to the pad. You raise the paddle until you're recognized by the LCO. Make sure the LCO recognizes you, because the LCO will say, like, okay, 5 is in the queue. At that point, you can take the paddle and place it back down by the pad. Please don't take the paddle with you when you chase the rocket. Don't use it as a fan. Don't use it to hit anybody.
Aww.
I mean, we really don't want to lose the paddle. But, and just basically, once you're recognized, just gently place the paddle next to the pad. Okay, your rocket's launched. What do you do next? You recover it. Next, please.
I've got pictures today.
And you bring the rocket back if you want to get a return. And the rules say, you know, for 2 flights, some of them you have to return, some of them you don't. I'm not going to get into that right now. And you go to post-flight rocket return, as opposed to pre-flight rocket return. Interesting. These are like the Team America rocket challenge signs, so they're a little bit more graphic, I guess, or descriptive. Anyway, you take the rocket back to post-flight rocket return, and you get your return. Next, please. Okay. When does return then? 90 minutes after the end of the event. Like, for instance, the event for Monday, tomorrow, ends at 5:30, so you have 90 minutes for that, and you get another number. And the official headquarters for where the returns go is room 309, that's my room. And the results from the day's event will be taped to the wall outside my room. And hopefully they will remain taped there. So, we'll see, with blue tape. Okay, next please. Okay, tours. Here's our tour bus. No, this is our tour bus. Yes. No expenses spared for your air contestants. Greg Bach is going to talk about the tours right now. Greg Bach arranged the tours. He's also our equipment manager, and he's done a fantastic job assembling all the hardware that you see out there today. It's really a superhuman job. And only a superhuman could do it, and that's Greg.
We arranged 2 tours for Tuesday. And the first one's at the Ubar Hazi, is the way I'm told it's pronounced, in the museum. And that's one that just opened back in December. And it's right near Dulles Airport. That one has a variety of aircraft. It's primarily aircraft, but a lot of missiles and rocketry stuff and some space stuff as well. They've got quite a few displays that you're going to be able to spend a lot of time at. We've arranged it so that we have a guided tour, and they're going to divide us up into about 3 groups. We're supposed to start the tour at about 10:30. The museum opens at 10 o'clock. And I recommend that we leave here in your cars around no earlier than 9:30 or 9:45. It only takes about 20 minutes as long as traffic goes down. If you leave too early, the traffic is still backed up going into Washington, D.C., so you really don't save any time. So unless we find out that there's an accident or something like that, we'll probably leave, you know, for a time that'll get us there in about 20 minutes. But it's not too early. $12 a part. the parking fee is $12, and so as you go into the museum parking area, you'll go ahead and pay that, and that's for a car load of people, and that's for the whole day. The tour takes about 2 hours. There's 2 hours of tour. So if you start at 10:30, that's going to put us at about 12:30 when it's done, and then you can look around on your own later on if you want, get lunch there, visit the souvenir shop, whatever else you want to do. And then that afternoon, we've got another tour at Aurora Flight Sciences Corporation, which is out here in NASA. And it's only, again, about a 15-minute ride. We're limited on parking space in that particular area. The Smithsonian, we're not, no problem. But here we're limited on parking spaces. So I'm going to take a look at the list. I think there's about 46 people that have signed up for that. We're trying to combine as many cars as we can to minimize the number of it because that facility doesn't have very many parking spaces. And the employees have enough parking to run more weekly. Make room for us. That'll start around 2:30. John Langford, who's a member of NOVAR and Internet manager, and he'll give us some overview of the facility there and what they do. Yes?
I want to talk to the people who signed up about carpooling. I could fit three extra people in my minivan.
Okay, yeah, and I can take people as well. I can take three people in line. So we'll arrange that. Let me get a look at the list and figure out exactly how many we have. And make sure that that's the number we have, and not like one name at a time. That's okay. We have to figure out how to do it.
I can take
two. Okay. I'll ask for that. I'm going to go a little bit later.
Do that with
the
Smithsonian
too. Well, the Smithsonian, you guys can do it. Save some money. That's good. $12. $12 just for parking. You can, if you want, if you have other plans, you can take a bus from the Uvar Hazy facility and go right down to the Smithsonian downtown. I think that's about $7. It's around trip. And that would probably, and then you can go downtown and fool around and go anywhere you want, basically, as long as you get on the bus back by 5:30, and that will take you back here. And that's a way to, when it's up and driving, it's a pretty difficult situation.
Greg?
Yes.
It's 7:50. But yeah. I just want to make sure that some of our people know that when you walk into the Smithsonian, they are checking baggage.
They'll check bags. On there, there's guards on the left and have a conveyor belt and metal detectors and things like that.
So my suggestion is make sure you take a shower the night before, guys.
Yeah, or don't take a bag. Don't take a bag with you, okay? And they use it like to do it pretty quick. We're going to meet on the right as you go into the museum entrance. On the left is where the guards are. On the right is like the welcome center, and that's where we meet the tour guides.
What about cameras?
Oh, you can bring cameras. I have to check with John Langford's facility. I don't know if he's in there.
I talked to him.
The Smithsonian is no problem with cameras.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah.
Are there directions to get there from the airport?
Yeah, the registration desk, we've got them, and we've got them to both places. They're all referenced from here. Mm-hmm. But you'll have plenty of time to do both.
Okay. Yes.
From Aurora. You said the Smithsonian would be 2 hours. Yeah, the Aurora one is about an hour.
So the sign up is out at the registration desk, which is out in the lobby. There's something I forgot to put on the sign up for Aurora, which is very important. If you are not a U.S. citizen and you want to go to Aurora, I need to know. You can still go to Aurora, but I need to know the fact that you're not a U.S. citizen. I don't think when you enter the door they're going to show you the conference room off to the right and just have you stay there for the duration of the tour, but if you're not a U.S. citizen, you have to see me because I have to keep track of that.
All they need to know is really the list, and we can give them a handwritten list that's out there.
Right.
It's just because they're being DOD
right.
There's one thing that they need, and then they need.
Right. We're not asking, you're not going to get like a full, it's not like getting your LAUP. Trust me, I've been through that. We're not going to be fingerprinting you at the police department. Thanks a lot, Greg. Next thing. The auction is going to be Tuesday night at 8:30, and people have been asking me all day and all day yesterday, what do I do with all this stuff I have to donate to the auction? Can they give it to me? And I keep saying, if you wouldn't mind, could you please bring it to the auction Tuesday night at 8:30? Because my hotel room is only so big, and it really is, frankly, a lot of the places we have, they're locked up, and I want to make sure that your stuff does make it to the auction. But I really encourage everyone to come to the auction, and before you go, visit your local ATM. Be helpful for the auction. But it really is the highlight. It benefits the Robert Cannon Education Fund, which is a very worthwhile cause as far as funding programs for teachers and educational programs.
Are you taking plastic again this year?
I guess I'll ask Bill Sadafor about that. Does he normally do the plastic?
Here.
All right, we'll take class then. All right. We'll we take class.
Give John your credit card and we'll give it back to you next month.
No, we take class then. Next, please. So barbecue Wednesday night. Just real quick, Red Hot and Blue is catering it. It's going to be in front of the summer house that I showed you earlier. While we're eating our barbecue, which is pulled chicken, coleslaw, potato salad, baked beans, lemonade, iced tea, cookies, and brownies. And I didn't leave anything out. Plates, forks, knives, tablecloths, things like that. We're going to be watching the finals of the Imagination Celebration right in front of you. It hopefully won't be dodging any of the entrants, but I will be doing that. And following that, we're going to hand out all of the trophies, all the awards, that includes the fun event awards, for all the events up to the point in time for Wednesday. That's the plan. And we're doing that basically to try to keep the banquet under 9 hours metric. So that's why we're doing that. Okay, next please. R&D. We have two R&D oral presentations that are going to be occurring in the Washington Room. And the Washington Room is kind of go down here, make a left, and go all the way to the end, and there's a room that's called the Washington Room. And that's going to be Wednesday and Thursday night, starts at 7:30. And for this year, B Division, we have cash prizes for B Division R&D that Robert Allway made available in memory of his parents. Okay. The banquet. Yes, this is Art's conception of what your banquet will look like. Not. Okay, the banquet will be in this room at 6:30 on Friday. We request people at least shower before they come to the banquet. Would be nice. Someone sent me a note, like, there's a suspicious rumor that we're going to be handing out free Darren Point trophies, and I'm like, where did that come from? The answer is, it's still a rumor, and the answer is no, we're not handing them out. That's okay. We do have lots of door prizes that have been donated by the vendors. We want to thank them. And Carl Stand Up has done an outstanding job of badgering the Little Rock vendor community. I listed Carl's help. I said, Carl, start with all the people who gave last year, and then do all the sports rocketry advertisers, and then just go through rocketry online and send everyone an email. And that's why you got 5-inch launch lugs with your chip. So I'm sure that was Rocketeer Online, but Carl did a really great job. And when the yellow freight truck showed up at his house with 500 pounds of Quest kits and a pallet, you know, I wrote back an email, well, we're shipping Yuri Geller to your house because if you can bend spoons, you can certainly levitate pallets. So.
Every
trophy this year is sponsored by a company, which is a first time for Narum. And I'll say this to the banquet, but this is really important. You know, this is something, for me, my Narum experience has been as a contestant. It's not that as the content director. I've certainly done a lot of functions at the three other Narums that I've helped run, as far as, you know, just various, all the way from 18 or not, 18, 23, 26, and 31. That's three or four. Anyway, we've been along and lost count. But this is the first time I've been as a CD where I've been exposed to the quote-unquote NARAM budget. And it's very important that the trophy donors really help out a great deal. Next, please. Before I say thank you, I have a couple late additions to my PowerPoint presentation, which is done. I want to show what the NARAM payloads look like. These are direct from Hawaii. They have Hawaiian stained in them. Okay. They are, like, I'm going to open it up. Well, I told Charlie that I hope they get through ag inspection because they're going to be flying out of Hawaii. They're looking for, you know, fruits, vegetables. One of them didn't make it, yeah. So, anyway, Charlie volunteered to make the payloads, and he's like, this is a really hard job. So how many do you have to make? Anyway, these are the NARAM payloads. But there's some controversy about, you know, what the payload would look like, and we put a picture of it out on the web so people could see it. If you have your own payload, we have to impound it tonight. I sent that out as an email to people, but some people may not have read the email. That's okay. In the Washington room, which is on the other side of this wall, we will be accepting starting at, look at the schedule for me, 9:30, thank you. At 9:30, we're going to be accepting the following four things. You ready? Squirt scale models, plastic models, research and development submissions, and payloads for impounds. I really urge you that if you have your own payload, just like take a look at this payload and see if this one's probably shorter. It's pretty close to minimum length. Because what we have to do basically is take your payload. I have to take it back to my room, put it on my gram scale. I have to mic it to make sure it's the right dimensions, and then you'll get it back Thursday. So there's nothing wrong. Wednesday. You know, it's just like when you go to the movie theater and they have like the words in reverse in the back, you know, you have to do those special glasses to do this for my teleprompter. Anyway, for Wednesday. So again, there really is nothing wrong with you hitting your payloads. I'm just saying, I wanted to bring these here tonight so you could look at them and you make the choice as far as you want to do. Alright, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just take a few questions about the stuff that I've covered, because then Tripp's going to come up and talk about the contest. Is that all right? So just like general stuff, like if you want to know like the men's room are to the right and the ladies' room is to the left, I can tell you that. So I'll open up just for general questions. Steve.
If you want to go into D.C., where is the closest metro station? Right off, down
66.
Which one is
it, though?
Vienna.
Vienna.
Yeah.
Vienna.
All right.
Closest what station?
Exit 62,
Nutley
Road to
the Anna
Metro Station.
What is it, Nightmare? Okay, exit 62,
office
66. Next question.
Can I use my NARAM 31 payload?
Can you use your NARAM 31 payload after you weigh it? You may have lost weight over the years. Been 15 years, may gain, whatever. Next question. Does that mean that as a contest director, I have survived the contestant briefing?
We're stunned.
I am absolutely amazed.
Hit squad's waiting outside.
All right. All right. Time for a cheap RSL. Trip Barber.
Okay. Well, I'll warm them up. I'm also this week the acting NAR president, so you're going to have to listen to me a lot. Mark Bundick's involved in the merger of his company, and for the first time in 22 years, can't make an NARAM. Yeah, he is not happy. He is still at work tonight at this hour, by the way. I called him a short time ago. He was there until midnight Friday night. It's bad. But he's going to keep his job, and that's good. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the overall range procedures. I think most people here were out on the range already. I'm not really going to talk about the sport range because that is just your standard model rocket range. We're running high power there through J motors, limited to J motors and nothing bigger, and a 4,500-foot waiver. There are some ground rules out at Great Meadow. We said treat the facility gently. They have some specific rules that they enforce for events that are held there, primarily because they're really concerned about their valuable, well-cared-for property, and they're concerned about the safety of the horses. People secondary here, people. These are $250,000, $500,000 horses that race out there. They don't want glass out on the field, so there's no glass containers of any kind permitted at Great Meadow. You're not allowed to bring private cooking materials. You're going to have to bring food or coolers. That's fine. Keep glass out of them. But no private cooking grills or anything of that nature. Their general rules are no pets. They said for us, well, okay, but keep them on a leash or keep them penned up, not running free in any case. If your rocket lands in a tree, we have 30 or 40 foot long extensible recovery poles. Do not cut a tree branch. This is not our property, so don't be cutting tree branches to get your rocket down. Use one of the poles. And we have very specific limits on what activities we're allowed to conduct on the field. These are as part of our permit, and it includes rocket flying, and it doesn't include any flying anything else. So that's just the condition under which we get Great Meadow. And biodegradable material, biodegradable wadding. Please don't use rock wool or fiberglass or something that if a horse ate it, the horse would get indigestion or get sick or be injured. This is a horse-centric operation out there. They make their money on the horse events, and they're very concerned, that particularly the people who run those events are very concerned about other users. And finally, as a general rule for the range, we're using FRS extensively, FRS radios extensively. Please stay off channel 7. That's the one we're using for range administration and that we'll be using for tracking. Use others if you want, but stay off number 7. I'm going to go quickly through the contest range procedures. I'm assuming here that everyone has a pink book and has read it. I'm not going to repeat what's in the pink book. As you all know, there are a couple of things in the pink book that are somewhat ambiguous, and every range, every contest director, and every RSO seems to interpret them slightly differently. So we've written down a set of interpretations for those. There aren't many, but there are a few. And these are the ones that the four RSOs, myself, Matt Steele, Rod Schaefer, and Tom Lyon, will be agreeing to follow in common. You'll recognize us. We'll all be wearing these NAR hats when we're serving duty as an RSO. I'll get to those specific event procedures in just a minute. A couple of general things. Range duty. We have a range duty assignment list that will be distributed that I'd like to hand out at the door on your way out. We've got a lot of inputs from people as to please change my shift to this, to that, to whatever. I want to serve duty with so-and-so, and I think we've accommodated all that we've heard. So we have a fresh printout of the range crew assignment list, and I'll have a couple of NOVAR members each take a stack and stand at the door as we leave here. We expect you to show up for your shift. Everybody has 1 2-hour shift per day. If you don't make your shift of range crew, you're not going to fly that day. And only the competition flyers are being drafted, I believe. And only the ones who are age 11 and older. But still right, Charlie?
Well, yeah, right
about
there.
Right about, okay, right somewhere around there. But not the very youngest kids. For check-in, present your engine for inspection before flight. You know that drill. If you don't do that, and then you don't return your model, it was a no flight. It's not a DQ. I read this carefully in the think book. It's a no flight. The flight never existed. So it's to your advantage to show the engine before flight. There's a new engine certification list as of July 24th that NAR Standards and Testing put out. I don't think there was any news on it, but there's been a number of bulletins published over the past several months of various certifications. Those are all incorporated on this list. And that's the list we're referring to. If you want to use a tower out there, certainly you're free to do that, but you can't stake a claim, permanent claim of ownership to a pad and just assume that you're always going to get that pad, or if you can only get that pad because you have put equipment up out there, then you may end up waiting a while because we're not going to double stack people on pads. It'll really back up the system. So if you really want to occupy a pad, it may take you longer than usual to get a pad assignment. I think you all know how to do the request of flight for misfires. if you can replace the igniter out at the pad, and personally I always carry a little pouch with me or a little can that has a couple extra igniters in it, so I can do a quick switch at the pad, that way you can keep your place in pad assignment. If you have to remove your rocket from the pad and take it away, you're going to have to go back through pad assignment. For launch devices, piston launchers. Everybody's going to be using pistons, I'm sure, or at least many people will be using pistons. The events are sort of such that pistons are advantageous, particularly since we have black powder motors again for the lower power classes. You're certainly free to use pistons. If you're using it inside a tower, no problem. If you're using it as a freestanding device, you need to show the RSO how you're making sure that the rocket is going to come off the piston some way other than sideways, which if you just have a bare tube and a model sitting on it, the odds are it will come off sideways. Put some little fingers on it. If you have 2 or 3 inch fingers, depending on the diameter, we're going to just say that's good enough. If you have some other technique that's innovative that you can convince the RSO this is going to work, well, be my guest. I'll certainly entertain those while I'm on duty. Let's see. And if you're using your own stake in the ground kind of launch pad for gliders, you have to have some form of blast deflector under the motor. You can't just blast directly at the ground. For returns, the 10.4 rule. The main event area of Great Meadow is a very long oval, an ellipse sort of. There's a fence around it. You can see the fence. It's the thing that divides the flying range from the area where the vendors are. There's a rail, it's called, like that around the entire circumference of the field. So for 10.4 purposes, we will go to that rail, but not beyond it to verify that your model is in fact in a tree. We can see it from there. If we can see it from the range, we won't go that far, but we will go as far as the rail. For tree models, if your model's in a power line, we'll go anywhere, because we don't want you to have any slight thought of going near a power line. We do not want people doing that. You're not allowed to do it under the safety code, so we'll go further than the rail if we need to, if you've got a model actually stuck in a power line and you want to get a 10.4 on it. As I mentioned, we do have some retrieval poles. Don't even think about using these poles for going after something on a power line. The only people who've ever been killed in model rocketry were killed that way, and there have been several of them. And we don't want one of them to be here. And there are some power lines around, and I think there's already at least one rocket on one of those power lines. So this is a real thing that's probably going to happen to somebody. Tracking's going to be to ejection. Use red tracking powder. That would be my recommendation. Don't use white. You want to use black, you're on your own. But you can see the skies. The weather this week is supposed to be chance of rain tomorrow, but they're saying 20 or 30%. The rest of the week, good. And, you know, the usual Northern Virginia kind of summer, which is late afternoon thunder showers about a third of the time. Temperature will be in the mid-80s. So the clouds are going to be over there. And so black tracking powder works great in a clear sky, but it doesn't work very good in a dark sky or a sky that has dark clouds in it. Red seems to work everywhere, so my recommendation to you would be to use red. We'll be tracking to ejection. Remember, if you don't have a track, if it's a track lost or no close, that doesn't count as a flight, except in egg loss, you have to bring the egg back to prove that it wasn't broken in that flight, and then it doesn't count as a flight. If you DQ'd by breaking the egg and track loss, that counts as a flight, and it was DQ'd. Okay, for specific events, streamer duration, I'm hoping everybody has read this, but I'm just to make sure, I'm going to go through these one at a time to make sure that everybody is on the same page with the RSOs about how these are going to be judged. Streamer duration, the streamer has to come out of the body tube, but that's all. It doesn't have to unroll. We're not going to go measure it. It just has to come out of the tube. Helicopter duration, I reread the Pink Book several times in preparation for this event, and I found that two rules in the Pink Book completely contradict each other on helicopter duration. So we're going to go with a more liberal interpretation, which as long as you make one rotation around the vertical axis, the roll axis, you can make rotations about other axes at your convenience. Somewhere in that, you know, those...
Except under power.
Yeah, except under power. Right. Yeah, that's bad. Right. But you do have to make one around the roll axis to be qualified. And then any number around pitch or yaw, or if you can think of another axis. Boost glide and rocket glide, got to go up. Up is defined, and this is not particularly well defined except in the radio control rocket glider code, but it's not particularly defined in the others. We're going to say within the cone of 45 degrees around the pad, under power and after power, doesn't matter as long as it's, you know, not hitting anybody. But under power, you got to go upward So we're saying within 45 degrees of vertical. In the glide phase, glide is going to be loosely defined, and as long as you maintain for some small period of time a path that's within 45 degrees of horizontal, we'll call that a glide. Now, if it does that and then has some kind of stall and then slams into the ground, that could be another reason. That could be a reason for a DQ. But you know, if you're gliding at 44 degrees, you're not going to be gliding for very long. This is sort of self-penalizing. But in terms of defining glide, we'll be pretty liberal. But we can't define straight down as a glide. So George.
Yeah, I believe there was a revision a few years ago that eliminated the 45 degrees type of thing, where a model had to be seen clearly going downwards before it would be
under power.
Yeah, well, I can't find it in the Pink Book, and I asked Tom Lyon, and, you know, what do you say, Tom?
Whatever the Pink Book says is what we're talking about.
Okay. I can't explain if there was such a revision. I'm not saying there wasn't. It's not in this Pink Book, because I did look for it. So we're going to have to address it with a rules change proposal.
It wasn't in any prior Pink Book.
Okay. Egloft, I've already said that. Payload, we already talked about impoundment. Support scale on plastic models, you just have to be going up within 45 degrees of vertical under power, and after that, safety code, don't hit anybody. And, yes, Mark?
The thing that comes up in support scale is separations in the free falling parts. Is there?
Well, that's a normal safety code thing. I mean, if you have heavy parts falling out of the sky in any model, including support scale, plastic model, or anything else, you can be DQ'd for dropping a heavy object out of the sky.
And people are getting, like, long boosters falling sideways, so they're supposed to have a parachute that didn't. Sometimes the standard is if it was supposed to have a recovery system on and it's falling out, when that's unsafe.
I don't think so.
It doesn't hit anybody. Okay.
Yeah. I had to go through this a lot in Team America because kids were dropping stuff out of the sky in all different configurations. And as far as I'm concerned, if it's falling at a safe velocity, whether it was intended to have a recovery device or not, if it's coming down at a safe velocity at the judgment of the RSO, that's okay. A very heavy, dense object falling with no recovery device is going to have an unsafe velocity, but a body tube falling sideways, it's hard to make those come down unsafe.
Okay.
We're really not looking for reasons to DQ things here. We're just trying to decide what we're going to do consistently amongst all four RSOs so you don't get a different opinion on each shift depending on which shift you fly on. And so that was a summary of the interpretations. There is a whole lot in the Pink Book about how to do things. One particular point in the Pink Book that is significant, since a number of people are probably going to be using reloadable D-13s and Egloft, you need to read what the Pink Book says about how to deal with reloadables. It's rule 4-point-something. It is a real nuisance. You're supposed to bring an unopened package with your reloadables. Remember, most of these motors come as a pack of three. And so you've got to bring an unopened package to check in the first time and open it, and then we impound the remainder two. This is going to be a real nuisance, but this is the way the Pink Book says you have to do reloadables that come more than one to a pack, and so that's the way we're going to have to do it.
Can you just sign the individual pieces like you would a normal motor? Because they're a paper casing. So have them sign it, initials, and D-13.
But you can't right now see it again when they come back.
No, but once they open it, sign all three so they can take all three back with them.
No, it says impound.
Yeah, we went... We need. This is a really hard rule to enforce in the Pink Book, so we need to think about what we wrote. That's what we wrote. We're going to do what we said we were going to do in the Pink Book. I don't really want to make up adjustments on the fly here. I wish we hadn't written it that way, but that's the way we wrote it. Chad?
What about some people if, let's say, Federer checks in a pack of D-13s below, can a different
editor
load out of that same
pack? Yeah, I don't see why not. We've impounded it, so we know what's in there, and we don't really care who uses it as long as it's with permission of the owner. Yeah, that would help a lot. Yeah, that way, you know, teams or sections can share packs. That'd be good. I want to make this as unpainful as possible because it's going to be a nuisance. Yeah, right. So I'm not looking forward to that, but hey, that's the way the rules were written. Okay, what other questions do we have about range operating procedures or event interpretations? Yeah.
As far as timers, are you going to have a set of timers for every pad?
No. There are 18 pads out there. Okay. We're going to have seven pairs of timers.
Just one, two.
So I don't...
How many, I don't know. I didn't look. How many teams are there?
There are seven timing teams. There are 14 people assigned as timers. People who are assigned as trackers are also expected to do duty as timers on timing days. There are a few more timers than there are trackers. So there are the timers who are timers number 7, 8, 9, and so forth don't have to track. But the first six are both timers and trackers. We're using three-station tracking with two people at each station but one scope. And we do have the software to deal with that in accordance with the Pink Book. So we do have three-station tracking, but not six scopes. This is uneven terrain. There are only three points on the field that are all on the same plane as the launch area that can actually see each other. They're less than 50 feet. They're more than 50 feet apart. It was really hard to find three places on the field. And it's very hard to level the scopes properly, so we're really not trying to put six scopes out there. We're going to be lucky. We've practiced this. This is not luck, but it's hard to get the tracker zeroed properly. And so we'll be spending some time doing that right. Okay, what else have we got here? Yep?
I just would like a clarification on something from the first-timers meeting. At least one competitor that I know of was given the impression that the standard, the shredded newspaper-style dog bark was not allowable on the field.
The what? I don't know. Can a horse eat that and not throw up?
No, it's treated.
Oh, really? It's treated so a horse will throw up if he eats it? Well, so does every piece of recovery wadding. If it's biodegradable, I don't care. Fiberglass is out. Don't be using fiberglass. I don't think paper... If you can treat paper with a chemical that makes it fire retardant, that's bad for horses, we're dead, because that's what recovery wadding is by definition.
John Mockheimer specifically said that.
That was my impression.
We can't use recovery wadding.
Right. Okay, we'll correct that one. Fiberglass is out for sure.
Right. If you see wadding on the field, pick it up.
Yeah. But, you know, guess what? We're going to pick up every piece of wadding that's on the field when we're done. So if you could please walk around, if you see stuff, if you walk past wadding somewhere out in the field, please pick it up. We really want this place to be clean when you're done. And all else failing, Novar is going to get out there and walk the whole width of the field at the end, but we would certainly like other people to have done it first. So please pick the stuff up so we're not leaving wadding of any kind out there for horses. Yep?
Maybe you ought to consider a little box or a little coffee can or something to pass so that we don't get the wires laying around in the grass.
Don't worry about the solar igniter wires. Every Novar launch we have out here, we go out and walk the line of the pads and, you know, get double handfuls of little solar igniter things and plugs. We're used to that. What we can't handle very well is recovery wadding spread over the entire width of the field. And it will be, and we're going to have to just pick it up. I want to say one more thing about heat. Heat is not as bad as it could be, but this is a really moist heat. It's exhausting. So please drink a lot of water and Gatorade. You need to do electrolyte replacement, not just water replacement, but you need to take care of that. We have had people actually collapse out here with heat exhaustion. It's not pretty, and it means an ambulance comes. This is really dangerous stuff. So please pound down the water and bring a little Gatorade or something to do some electrolyte replacement during the course of the day as well. Okay, I think that is that's all I got. Oh, more questions. Tom?
Not a question, but
All right.
I need authors who would like to write some of the event coverage for the magazine. I still need somebody who would like to volunteer to do 500 words on the egg wash duration event, on the payload altitude, egg wash altitude, streamer multi, and B rocket glide. So if you would like to volunteer to write it, come see me immediately when this is over so I can get your name down for one of these, please. Right? Tom's waving at me. Good. Tom's going to do one. Okay. Thank you very much.
Bob?
I noticed the way you have the pads set up out there, you do not have 15-foot spacing pad to pad.
They're 9 feet 3 inches apart, so when we're firing the pad next to it has to be empty, vacant. The RSOs, and I want the RSOs to stay behind. We do need to sort that out. If you're flying an e-motor or bigger, it would have to be several pads, but I don't think that will happen. Yeah, the 100-foot diameter circle with 18 pads in a semicircle is 9 feet 3 inches apart. That's the way it goes.
If you make it a circle, it works.
Yeah. Well, that works, but then other things don't. Back in the back.
What page was the expanded polystyrene injection plug being on carriers?
Yep. Yeah. Well, we said it, we meant it. Those are not particularly well digestible by horses, but they're also really visible, so I think we'll find them. Yes, Chad?
Okay, you just did address this specifically on the DPA model. The one on the hanging tree track loss, what's it called? The DQ no return?
Yeah. I mean, the 10.4 rules, the rules are very specific event by event of which models have to be returned, and egg lofters and payloaders have to be returned. I think payload is as well. I did reread the whole pink book, and I didn't make the stuff up. It's in our handout. So there's two events where you have to make a return. And in sport scale and plastic model, you don't have to, but you're awarded maximum flight damage points if you can. Yes?
So clarification on the check-in. It sounded like face-to-face you will bring your motor up, get it checked, and then actually do your final prep there. Is that...
Yeah, normal procedures. You can check your motor in and go away with it and come back. The problem is with reloadables. It's sort of there's some special things you have to do. So the real issue is with them. Oh, by the way, our eggs are all candled and weighed. And we're not going to put the weight on them. But Ivan Galish, who does the eggs for Team America Rocketry Challenge, applies the same over-engineering principles to your eggs. So they've actually been candled, and not only are they not cracked, but there's no beaks or feet or anything like that inside them. He said he's really become disillusioned with eggs, having candled several thousand of them over the past 2 years. Okay, I don't want this to go on too long, but yeah, see. Depends on what it does. Normally DTs don't make their things come screaming in extremely fast directly vertically. Well, you know, if you make a glider come screaming in vertically at a high velocity, that's going to get DQ'd. I've seen very few DTs do that. You normally get a floppy kind of return. But don't bring stuff out of the sky at high speed. That's not safe. Who else? Yep. Chris? Yeah. If you've given up on a rocket and it won't be returned, tell returns that too so we can quit waiting for you. Yeah, that helps. Lila? Has to be totally enclosed in the rocket when it takes off. Did I miss the point there? I guess if the bottom end of the payload capsule is open, but it's contained inside the rocket at the moment of liftoff, that sounds totally enclosed to me.
I mean, it doesn't have to be sealed. It just has to be inside.
Right. I think Rod Schaefer will show us a new definition of totally enclosed on eggs. I'm looking forward to this. Okay. MJ? Well, we were just negotiating that. We have had it picked, but one of them isn't here yet, so we're going to have to Okay, Jonathan will mention that. Okay, last call for questions. I'm always available for questions on the field, but this goes better if it's not done under pressure. So, this is not pressure. This is fun. I fly rockets for fun. My job's where the stress is. This isn't it. So, be good sports. There's no lives at risk. Millions aren't at stake. This is just for fun.
Except for B Division R&D.
Well, yeah, except for B Division R&D, where cash is on the line. Okay. Suspension and stress is authorized here. All right. Anything else? I'm going to turn the microphone back over to Jonathan for a minute for a couple of more details, and then we'll adjourn, and the four RSOs or the three others will stay behind with me for a couple minutes. Thanks. Thanks, Trevor. Appreciate that. A couple quick things. Up on this table right here are five sheets of paper. It's the list of all the people that I have as being here at NARAM. The purpose is I want to collect, if you want to volunteer, your room number. And what I'll do is, after tonight, I'll take the list, I'll type it up on my computer,
and I'll list all the room numbers of all people in Narum outside my door in case you're trying to find someone. I urge people to put door signs outside the door. A lot of people have done that. It's a big hotel, so if you have your room number, that'll help. But it's like it's your choice. But it would be nice if something that we suggested, you know, would have happened. The other thing I wanted to talk about quickly is that after we handed out the range assignments for Narum 46, there were a number of requests for reassignments, and we've done our best to kind of move people around. So we're reissuing tonight the range assignment sheet. Do not throw away the yellow sheet of paper that was in your pack. Do not throw it away because the reverse side has all the times for all the shifts. And this, the hotel, the copier here is a, you know, kind of like a fax machine. You put the one sheet of paper in and a sheet of paper comes out. This is all popped out of my inkjet printer, so keep them dry too. So there are 100 copies of this. So help yourself so it runs out.
Sure.
Last thing I wanted to mention.
There'll be people at the two doors on the exit handing them out if people leave.
Okay, there'll be two people. People to be named later, I guess.
Carl and Rachel.
All right. We'll be doing that. Stand at the door. You have to leave. The last thing is I want to announce to the contest jury is, you know, when you said this one thing that a contest director gets to do is to pick the contest jury, and I get to do that myself. And I thought about it a long time, and unfortunately one person with name isn't here yet, but that's okay. The first person is Ted Cochran. He's from Minneapolis. And then we have Glenn Sevier from Delta, Pennsylvania. Get that right? And Fran Miller from somewhere in Wisconsin. I don't remember the hometown. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Oh, yeah. Go Packers. Ladies and gents, those are your Narum 46 contest jury. $5, no waiting. Anyway, thanks very much for coming to Narum. And we hope to see you on the field tomorrow. Have a good night.